tonight's session, I forgot what we titled it, Community Organizers, Radical Activists, or Disciples of Democracy. And my name is Ron Dwyer-Boss. I've been teaching this week in the village. A lot of people look familiar, but I don't know if it's from the dining hall or from my sessions. Has anybody been in my sessions? So a quick background. I've been talking about community development in general, based on experience working in urban centers as well as rural communities. I avoid suburbs, they just confuse me. Based on an approach called asset-based community development, which works with communities from the starting point of what they have, and congregations from what they have, not just what's missing, what their needs are, where their flaws are. Because we found that approach, one, it burns people out, two, it can have a lot of negative consequences for the community that starts to believe that it can't do anything, and three, because those of us who do this work often say we've never seen a need solve a problem. So why start with needs assessments rather than asset inventories? So we've been talking about that kind of thing. And Nancy's coming in grimacing because...
I'm tiptoeing.
You're tiptoeing. Oh, that's fine.
Thank you. I apologize.
And so we talked about ways of bringing people together, about using building relationships. And yesterday we talked about power some as really nothing more or nothing less than the ability to act. And community power, the ability of a community to act. And specifically we talked about these three primary sources where power comes from. It was interesting for Kit and I to sit down and have a conversation that this same analysis is used in corporations. It turns out I could have made a ton of money if I'd gone in the corporate world and helped, because they do these analyses of where the power is in other corporations. So, oh well. I've had a lot of fun doing this. Three sources of power generally come from either credentials or titles, things that society has bestowed on people or they've earned. I use the example of my sister, who's a social worker, has all her licenses and has fairly specific training that has resulted in the fact that if you are on the streets of Portland in a way that appears to be not healthy for you and that you appear to be a danger to yourself, she can commit you to a hospital against your will. That's power. And it comes from her particular credentials and training. A huge source of power in our world is control of resources and money. If you control resources, water, food, you have a lot of power. But another source of power that we often forget when we get in our cynical mode or whenever we hear about power on television, because that's all they tell us about is these other kinds, is relationships. And relationships are extremely powerful. And if you just think about your own life and the people who have influence on you, that relationships are a big part of it. So when a lot of times when working in communities, we're basically trying to change the context from the world as it is to the world as we'd like it to be. And that's a phrase community organizers use a lot. Usually when people come together and want to make some change, they're trying to change the world as it is to the world as we'd like it to be, which is what's drawn me to this work, because it's theologically very sound, fundamentally very Christian. Change generally comes from two places, organized money or organized people. Some of us have this, although this power often is siloed and regulated and controlled in agencies and bureaucracies, so it's really hard to marshal the energy of that kind of power. This kind of power definitely, and even political systems, even democratic political systems, are very prone to be influenced by organized money. So most of our communities, most of us regular people, have this option if we want to make change towards a more loving world, a more just world, the kinds of things that our values embrace. Our options organize people. And that's what we're going to look at tonight a little bit, which is what is the role of community organizers in this? And who are these people that got national attention during the last presidential election. It was a blessing and a curse for people who work in community and are community organizers, because forever their parents really never understood what they did for a living. You know, when you talk, you sit in coffee shops and talk to people, you go into living rooms and eat their meals, this is a job. Or my mom for a while thought I was saying that I was doing something that involved like helping people organize their workspace, which my wife, anyone that knows me, is not at all what I could be paid to do. And then all of a sudden everyone at least had an opinion of what a community organizer was, if not the knowledge. So little blessing, little curse for folks. But we're gonna talk about that. And we're gonna talk about in the context of Frederick Douglass' observation and counsel to Abraham Lincoln was that power that creates and upholds the status quo, never voluntarily cedes itself. Power doesn't usually say, here's some for you. It becomes very entrenched, very self-reinforcing. Case of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, they were talking about whether the South would ever decide not to have slaves, or whether this was going to require a higher level of intervention. So that's the context. Any questions about that, or about last night's session on power, because it sort of is the basis for talking about community organizers? Any comments from last night, those of you who were there? Okay, so what we're going to do is look at some clips of different perspectives of what community organizers are. And as you're watching these, try to listen for phrases or images that sort of catch you. And we'll go through several of them for about 15 minutes. I got a little excited there, sorry. Okay, so the first clip is one put together by Organizing for America, one of the groups that spawned out of the Obama campaign, and actually was a video put together very early in that time called The Meaning of Community Organizing, because it became clear to them that they were going to need to explain to campaign workers and others what they thought this meant.
Citizens can have an enormous influence in what happens in Washington. The problem is they're just not organized right now. And so those who are organized, the corporations, the special interests, the bigger lobbies, they can have a disproportionate influence. And part of what hopefully this campaign is about is to tilt the scales of workers more in favor of ordinary people.
The challenge we have in front of us is 5.5 weeks to do what in South Carolina took us 10 months. So there's a lot of work ahead, but it starts with us building relationships, sharing our stories, and finding leaders in the community.
Ashley, would you mind telling your story?
My mom got sick when I was 9 and had cancer. And at that point, she ended up losing her job, even though she worked her ass off. When she lost her job, she obviously lost her health care as well. So now my mom was left with cancer and 2 kids, and we didn't have the money to pay for it, so now we were hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt because cancer is as expensive as you guess. We have filed medical bankruptcy. So at that point, I kind of noticed at 9 years old, you can kind of tell, even though my mom really tried to hide it, that we were kind of sinking fast. I looked around and saw the one thing that ended up costing the most, and that's food. I convinced my mom that I really liked relish and mustard, so you know what it is, because I felt like condiments are cheap and bread's cheap, so that's what I did for a little while until my mom got better. I went on to college and I was studying film production. In 2004, I went out canvassing. And I was canvassing in the most poorest area in my county. And this little kid ran after me. And he started telling me all this stuff about his family and how, you know, he wanted Carrie to win because it was going to make a difference. difference for him. And his mom, who was working three jobs, and he just take care of his brother and sister after school every day as a 9-year-old. Think about this kid he's got come. That was his hope. And so the next day I went to school and changed my major to political science. And then I realized, you know, it wasn't just me as a 9-year-old trying to help my mom. It was another kid trying to help his mom. And there's millions of children around doing the same thing. So I guess it's kind of my story and why I'm here today. So when we tell our stories, it tells people who we are and why we're here. To build the relationships, to develop the leaders, to create the teams that can sustain this movement beyond Inauguration Day. That's why we're here in Pennsylvania. We have this great opportunity to build the grassroots network.
A lot of people don't know what a community organizer is. And in fact, I didn't know what a community organizer was entirely when I became one. I have been inspired by the civil rights movement and the idea of people working at a grassroots level to bring about change, to get people involved in shaping their own destiny. It's something that I carry with me when I think about politics today. Obviously, at a different level and in a different place, but the same principles still apply. If you've got a lot of people organized to vote, if you've got people who are raising money and small.
That's where I wanted to stop. Yeah. Perfect. So, what kind of phrases or images came out of you from that sort of introduction?
Telling our story.
Telling our story.
So people know who we are.
Big, big part of community organizing is teaching people how to tell their story, why they're there. Other phrases or images?
What they have in common with not only their story, but their story has in common with other people's stories.
Connecting stories. Anything else strike anybody?
Seems like people that haven't done community organizing. Seems like, well, even Obama was like, I didn't know what it was until I did it. It's like, it seems it's just a term, or it's just, you know, see how many people want to do it.
Very much. So what would that video say a community organizer is?
A family amateur.
Amateur?
To begin with.
To begin with, yeah.
Like you felt like you fall into it.
And it's almost someone who's never been involved before or has never had a chance to share their story or connect with other people at a grassroots level.
Yeah.
Or maybe felt their own need and then realized, oh, my need is your need. You know, that's my what I experienced, other people are experiencing. And suddenly this is really powerful. You're not the only one in that situation.
Does anybody remember what the, whatever it was called, the field office director or the state director at the beginning of the video said they had to do? And 5 weeks that they didn't stop calling, 2 months. Said share stories, find leaders. So two big parts of community organizing are people coming out of their own experience to connect with others and help connect stories, and to find leaders in that who can help their neighbors connect their stories. All right, next one, which uses the clip from this one.
Not much has been made of Senator Obama's community organizing days. Now, he says it was a life-altering experience that prepared him to lead America. But our next guest reveals the background story of how community organizing is part of a grand scheme perpetuated by none other than William Ayers.
A lot of people don't know what a community organizer is. In fact, I didn't know what community organizer was entirely when I became one. I have been inspired by the civil rights movement and the idea of people working at a grassroots level to bring about change, to get people involved in shaping their own destiny.
Well, community organizing definitely has shaped Senator Obama's destiny. In 1985, fresh from Columbia University, Obama returned to Chicago to become just that, a community organizer. A job, he says, qualifies him in part to hold the nation's highest office. But what exactly is a community organizer? After all, he didn't even know what it was when he started as one.
I think the community organizer of Barack Obama's case was...
What Andy Martin went on to say, it was very quick, we only lost the last couple seconds, was a community organizer, in the case of Obama's case, is somebody who is working to overthrow the United States government. That was the Fox News editorial board's take on community organizer, and their entire programming throughout the campaign reflected that expose. So lots of folks watched that. Yeah.
I'd say the picture of Obama we got from before he cut out, the red cloth, the hand up like this, you could almost, it was a salute. It was just.
Yeah, there's some classic editing in that one. He's at a neighborhood rally and waving to people, and it catches them in a Hitler-like salute. There's not a lot of images in that one, but the reason I show that one is because tens of millions of people saw that because they aired that over and over again. That a community organizer is somebody engaged in the radical overthrow of the government. So that doesn't require a lot of debriefing.
So you want some kind of list?
Huh?
People tailing you?
It happens.
He worked as a community organizer.
This is the Republican National Convention. Except that you have actual responsibilities, was Sarah Palin's take. Was a community organizer was sort of like a small town mayor, except a small town mayor has actual responsibilities. And then Rudy Giuliani's was sort of more a showmanship thing. But that was a view that was put out. What in that take, what's a community organizer? It's between the lines. All right.
They're chanting 0-0.
Zero.
Someone with no experience.
Someone with no experience.
It's not a real job.
Not a real job. The clip I love to show after this one, but I wasn't able to get it before I came up here, was when Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York. The East Brooklyn congregations, of which there were several Lutheran congregations, was part of a community organization that actually was affiliated with the Industrial Areas Foundation, which was founded by Saul Alinsky. So they were very much in the middle of what these guys were ridiculing. And they worked to create more new housing and home ownership opportunities for working class folks in East Brooklyn, which hadn't had investment in it at that point since the late 60s. And they got some housing, and what was really cool is the people who got some housing dedicated themselves to working to help get more housing created to revitalize the neighborhood, but also create opportunities for people. They've worked on this for months and months and months, did research and negotiations with council members and borough presidents and with the mayor's office, because they needed the city to allocate a certain amount of money for this to happen. Just like any construction project, you can't go and break ground unless you've got the financing behind you, and every piece of financing for an affordable housing project usually is contingent on a local match. So they had worked with Giuliani, and then they had him at a big meeting at a church where he came and announced in the 3 minutes he was allotted, that he was committed to the project, he had put it in his budget, and he had put the entire amount needed in the budget. So everybody's very excited. These 15, 20 Christian congregations that are making this happen. And then in the video that documented this story, they asked, they interviewed Rudy Giuliani at the groundbreaking. So it was a groundbreaking thing, and he's the mayor, so he's there. He says, they asked, what's your relationship with East Brooklyn congregations like? And he said, well, it's good, but he said, it's not easy. These community organizations, you know, they don't mess around. They hold you accountable. If they tell you you have 3 minutes at the mic and you go 3.5, they turn the mic off. They research their issues before they get there. They know your political strengths and vulnerabilities. I can't remember the fourth thing you said, but then he says, they're really everyday people making government accountable. They're the essence of democracy. This is the same man who, you know, at the show, which, you know, his point, his role there was to be part of the show, acts as if community organizers are, that he doesn't even know what it is. But I love to show those two together because it's just fun to take these national figures and get their contradictions together. The next piece is put together by it's called Congregations for Justice. It's a piece on congregational-based community organizing. It was put together by a Jewish synagogue. Been shown in a lot of ELCA churches. It's just a small clip from it. And probably we're going to see me and Sue again first, and then, oh no, right to it.
Hearing the possibilities of the congregation of this community organizing, it was just the most hopeful, exciting
My computer's never been so excited.
Opportunity to actually make a little change.
Commits to the process of doing these conversations. Sometimes it will be dozens, sometimes it will be hundreds. The conversation work is really important because it really grounds the energy in the community. So it's not that there's a very passionate social justice leader, but it's actually, well, what's going on in the community?
We have a lot of people from the former Soviet Union, Ukraine, and various other places that are very limited English-speaking older adults. What happens to them, as what happens to many English-speaking people, is they go to a doctor's appointment, and unless they have someone come with them, they don't know what the doctor's talking about. So we got together and we said, you know, what's it like for you? And this little cadre went out into the community and surveyed 460 people.
And what starts to emerge is a community of people passionate about change. People start to see together that we can engage the system. We can engage decision makers. We can engage leaders.
We had an educational forum and we had people from the places where they get care come, and we said, you know, this is a problem for them. They come in with the walls in front of them, and after talking, they are gracious, they're understanding. It gives you the incentive to keep going.
At the end of the day, it's all about creating community. The energy moves beyond what is the one issue. It's about creating a real community.
People catch that last line? The energy is about beyond one issue. It's about creating community. Can you go ahead and cut that? So in that video, you saw more about, heard more from people who are engaged in the organizing process. We had a little bit of interview with one of the organizers. In that video, what's a community organizer do, or what is community organizing?
Listening.
Conversation facilitator.
Conversation facilitator. Other impressions from that video? Things that struck you, phrases that you found interesting or confusing or contradictory to your own experience?
They're not trying to change the world, trying to change this thing that's in front of them that is affecting their neighbors.
It's not the hugely dramatic thing, you know, that you might think of, like, I can't change anything because I'm just one person that's just, like you said, it's just doing the thing that's in front of you. It has a ripple effect, is kind of the idea.
Even getting people together and talking about it, like people are, like she said something like people get excited about change or passionate about changing things. Maybe people that are even skeptical about what you're doing once they hear or listen or get together and they feel some of that fervor and want to go do something.
Yeah, they went out and talked to neighbors and talked to local officials who initially were afraid that their conversation, it was initially a listening conversation to hear what that official's view was and why they had that view and what was important to them. And then it felt more like a relationship than a confrontation. Yeah?
I think that it's related to, since we're not bringing our issue to you, we are coming to you to help you with your issue.
I can't tell you how many times I've had official, and we've, you know, talked about the things we want to listen to and get across, but we always, you know, have somebody designated to say, what can we help you with? And the jaw drop you get from a city council member or a state senator, when at the end of the conversation it's not, what we want you to do right now is this, but what can we do to help you? We're not promising we're going to do it, but we're just interested in that two-way piece. So it is about power, and it's about power to make change, and it's about using the power of relationships and organized community, and that this Jewish Fund for Justice video really talked about that, that it's about organizing community, and then listening within that community to what everybody cares about, and then when you find something that a large group of people commonly care about, then enabling them to act on it. When I was first starting out in community organizing, I was regularly told by my mentor, remember, you're organizing community. You're not organizing affordable housing. You're not organizing community policing. You're not organizing economic development. Of course, we were working on all those issues, and I cared about those issues, and I've gone to planning school, so I knew a lot about those issues. And I had answers that I wanted to just shortcut to. And his point, and the point in that video, was that if you organize community and get people in relationships and help them accomplish one thing, then they can accomplish more things. If you just put a flyer out that says, you know, we're rally 12 o'clock for affordable housing, who comes to that? Who comes to the, and we've all, many of us have come to an event that's for something or to protest something, who comes?
People with that interest.
Yeah. People with that interest, or people who like to be part of something bigger than themselves and haven't found a way to do that yet. And that's only good for so much. And smart people in these arenas know that. they know they can reach out. But when it's a group of regular folks who've been researching an issue, know the issue well, have talked to neighbors, are sort of ordinary people taking on something that's right in front of them to make their neighborhood or community a better place, they know that's not going away. And that they need to engage in a relationship in that group. So it's useful for getting people in power to act the way we want them to. But it's also useful for creating our own things. The one flaw of sort of old school Chicago style community organizing was it was really based on the idea that it was developed in order to hold government accountable, to hold power accountable. So we organized people to hold, in that case, the Daily Machine, machine politics accountable to regular people, to get them to do the right thing with their power. And over the years, a lot of us have shifted and expanded that to include the ability to hold ourselves accountable. And say in a community, if we don't like the way the park is, and the city doesn't have the funding, resources, or will to come work on it, well, let's do it. Let's go around the neighborhood, find out who can do carpentry. It's cool to ask if it ever was. Just because somebody's a doctor, and we know he's a doctor and he lives 3 doors down, doesn't mean he doesn't have other interests and other skills and talents that can come to play. The other key thing a community organizer does is helps identify leaders. An organizer, like many professions and very much like pastors, can't get to everybody. Once it gets going, when I was organizing in the Pilsen neighborhood, which is only about 3-4 miles long and a mile wide, it had 35,000 people in it. I was not going to talk to everybody. My job was to find leaders in group meetings, identify, have conversations with them, see if I could pull out their leadership skills, get them in training on everything from how to run a meeting to how to listen for other people's gifts and passions, so that they could make it happen. And my job was then to support the leaders. When you start out, you're doing both, but eventually, most community organizers are primarily doing leadership development and keeping a leadership pipeline going. It's the main job. But they're developing leaders to create community. They're not developing leaders to there's these little institutions in most cities where you learn how to run for office and stuff. And both parties, have that at most of their local areas where you can learn how to run for office. And it's not that kind of leadership. It's the kind of leadership that helps you create community. Which is one of the reasons congregations and most denominations really support community organizing. Because what's the byproduct of community organizing? That's what the organizer's job is. Community. And people who can get stuff done. What church doesn't want a church full of people who can get stuff done? And can run meetings. And can hold people accountable. And can listen and find out who wants to take on this or that. And it's not all on the pastor anymore. How many are familiar with the Stephen Ministry Program? Listening, counseling. It's a lay ministry program where people get trained in how to go out and do pastoral care. So pastor can't get to everybody. And some of our pastors, one thing I love about my senior pastor is he's one of the few pastors who will openly acknowledge he is not good at nor likes pastoral care. It's just not his gift. He's great at a lot of other things. That's just one thing he's not great at. But he knows he has a congregation full of people who are. So they get trained and they go do it. Community organizers very much work the same way. Part of what organizers train people in also is the principles of democracy. So we spend a lot of time talking about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the basic principles of everyday people having power to improve their communities. So it's by many who do it consider it sort of a patriotic profession. So it was sort of wild in 2008 when when Fox came out with the view that it was to overthrow the government. That I think that view comes from some places. One, and it has to do with the things organizing is not, but often gets confused with. It's not activism. It's, again, well, a quick story. When I was organizing this community of Pilsen, 35,000 people, 85% were first or second generation Mexican immigrants. The rest were Eastern European folks, usually third or fourth generation. So that meant a couple of things. First of all, it meant the entire neighborhood was Roman Catholic. You just come from those cultures, you've got Catholic churches. And the joke when I was sort of installed to do this work by the ELCA was Bishop Sherman Hicks, who did it, said, you know, I've never put somebody so far from so many Lutherans in my life. And he had a map of all the Lutheran congregations in Chicago, and I was in the desert of Lutheranism. But the Catholics, after much discussion, the priests decided that was okay, Lutheran was close enough. So we had nine huge, you know, those huge Chicago parishes with tons and tons of people. And we were working, and we started doing these listening campaigns and hearing what people cared about, and leaders came together and sorted through all the conversations they had had with people in their churches, and identified three issues that they wanted to work on. Housing. They wanted affordable housing that was a two-flat, granny flat, because all those cultures believed in having an extended family. And very little of the housing had that. I'll go quick. We have 5 minutes. The second was they wanted police officers to not just drive through their neighborhood or chase gangbangers through the neighborhood. They wanted to actually get out of the car and walk around. You know, an old concept called walking the beat. This was before there was community policing in vogue. And they wanted better streets and sanitation service. Most neighborhoods got trash picked up twice a week in a big city. That's important. Theirs was once a week, and sometimes not at all. And so there was rats and all kinds of things, but there was garbage. So they wanted to work on those issues. So we started working on all those issues, trailed back to the mayor's office in Chicago. So he eventually had control over all of these things. So we wanted to have a big meeting with the mayor to get him to commit to certain specific things on that. We met with the department heads and those things, did all that homework. The leaders in the neighborhood did a great job. But we needed to get a lot of people there, and we needed them all to know why they were there. Now, there was a lot of ideas. We could put posters up, we can put flyers up, we can hand flyers out. There was another organization in the neighborhood that always served beer. That was a way you could get people. We decided to take an approach that would make it very clear, beyond a doubt, to the mayor that every person in that plaza knew what they wanted and why they wanted it and why they were there. So we made 20 flyers. They were each handed. Two people at each parish and a couple other leaders got one. That was it. The flyers were only for the purpose of sitting down and meeting with somebody and explaining what we were going to ask at that meeting. It wasn't for passing out. They were discussed in small groups in churches. They were discussed in living rooms. People would invite friends over. But they weren't to be passed out. They were only to help people remember the 3 points we were getting from the mayor and the answers we wanted from the mayor. This went on for 3 weeks. We had 650 people come and show up in a plaza in front of a church. One church, whole church processed from their church with parchments and a cross and everything, about a half mile. It just seemed the cheapest act to the mayor at that point. And it was very clear. Everyone there knew what they wanted. They knew what the answer they wanted was. And so when the guy who asked the questions on their behalf, the mayor was yes, yes, yes in all three cases. And they worked and got all three things they wanted. That piece is just to say that happened because there was communities, small groups who were put together around common interests, who knew what they wanted and weren't just coming to a rally, they were coming to participate in their community, to act in the public sphere. Tomorrow's session, we're going to talk a little bit about this. The ELCA has put out a workbook on community organizing to help introduce it to congregations, and how congregations can engage in community organizing and use community organizers to both strengthen their congregations as well as to teach people how to act in the world in a way that's effective and joyful and just. So thanks for coming tonight. Sorry I was a little rushed. We squeezed in. Thanks to John, who's not here right now, but he helped get these videos to all clip in the right spots for the most part. So, and I'll stick around here a little bit.